Okay, so this week, until now, the topics we've been talking about are of general interest, and there are cases where it might be helpful for you to know some of these laws in terms of various decisions you might have to make or things you might want to do. But the bottom line is the laws we've talked about until now, Trumot U'Masrot, Orla, Chadash. Once you have the halakhic positions that you're going to follow, it is possible at least to fulfill all of these laws simply by relying upon the mashgiach, by making sure that you buy food that has a proper supervision. That's makbid. If you're makbid on chadash, then you're going to need to find a supervision that's makbid on chadash. But the point is, there isn't... you can fulfill these laws, and if you want to be mafresh your own trumot u'masrot, you can, but you certainly could go out and make sure that that you only purchase food that the trumot u'masrot were taken carefully and that you had supervision to attest to that, and then you wouldn't really have to do anything on your own. The topic we're going to be talking about this week, which is hafrashat chala, is really the first topic that we're coming to that obviously depends what you do in your kitchen, but that you really need to know in order to run your own kitchen properly. And that you have to be aware of, because even if you buy food with the best hashgachot possible, you still could wind up violating Yisurim if you don't know the laws of Hafrashat Chala. Although, as we will see, the laws of Hafrashat Chala are somewhat difficult, they're confusing, and they present some real challenges in one's own kitchen on a certain level, dafka in industrial kashrut supervision in factories and bakeries and in restaurants, certain types of restaurants at least. This is a very, very, very big challenge, and I hope to be able to explain to you a little bit about how the creative methods that contemporary poskim have come up with to handle that challenge. But let's start, as we always do, with psukim. I'm sorry I didn't hand out a sheet because it really was just these psukim, but I will read them to you and you can look them up afterwards. I'm reading here from Bamidbar, Perek Tedvav. This is Parshat Shlach. Interestingly enough, a mitzvah given immediately after Bnei Yisrael got the terrible decree that they weren't going into Eretz Yisrael. The very next mitzvah begins with the words Ki Tavo El Eretz Moshvotechem. A little bit of irony there, according to Rashi. It's actually a bit of encouragement. One day you will get there. But in any case, this is the mitzvah. Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Lemur. Daber El Bnei Yisrael B'yamarta Lehem Ki Tavo'u El Eretz Moshvotechem. No, I'm sorry, that's not the right pasuk. After telling you that, one second. Why am I off? Okay, it's Perek Tedvav. After that pasuk, which begins Ki Tavo'u El Eretz Moshvotechem, we have the following. Sorry. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Perek Tedvav, Pasuk Yud Zayin. By Daber Hashem Moshe Limor, Daber El Bnei Yisrael B'yamarta Lehem Bivoachem el haaretz, asher ani mevi etchem shama, v'haya be'acholchem milechem haaretz, tarimu truma ladonai. Reshit arisotechem chala, tarimu truma, ki trumat goren, kein tarimu ota, me reshit arisotechem titnu lashem truma ledorotechem. I'll read those psukim again because I didn't give them to you, and let's explain them. By the Bereshim Moshe Leimor, the Berel Bnei Yisrael Amarta Lehem, Bivoachem El Haaretz, when you enter the land, Asher Ani Mevi Etchem Shama, V'haya Be'achalchem Milechem Haaretz, when you eat from the bread, the food of this land, Asher Ani Mevi Etchem Shama, V'haya Be'achalchem Milechem Haaretz, Tarimu Truma LaHashem. You have to elevate something to Hashem. Now Truma we already learned about, in a different pasuk we learned about Truma. But this is a different type of truma. That truma was taken from the grain, and also from Tirosh and Yitzhar. Now we have a different type of truma. Reshit arisotechem, chala, tarimu truma, from the dough that you make. The beginning of that, you have to take another truma. Kitrumat goren, kein tarimu ota. Just like you take truma from the goren, which is the threshing floor from the grain, and you give that to the Kohen. Also from the bread, from the dough, you have to take a truma. Me reshit arisotechem titnu lashem truma ledorotechem. So at first glance, at least, it seems that we have here another mitzvah hatluya ba'aretz, a mitzvah that's part of the system that we've been learning about. We have grain growing in Eretz Yisrael. So the first thing we have to do is wait for the crop of chadash to turn into yashan, at least in Eretz Yisrael, right? We have to wait for the korban omer to be brought. Then we have the yashan crop, we have to harvest it. And once we harvest it, we have to take off truma and ma'asrot. And then I have grain that I can make into flour that now I should be able to eat. And the Torah says, okay, the next thing is once you bake it into bread, again you have to take another truma called challah that you have to separate off from the bread. So it sounds like this is part of the same system. And in fact, that is indeed, in theory at least, the case. The Rambam tells us, and the Shulchan Aruch as well, that challah, just like truma, the Torah said, kitrumat goren, that the truma, like, that challah, like truma, I don't know, that challah, like truma, is kadosh, and it can only be eaten by Kohanim and their families, and it can only be eaten b'tahara. And also challah can only be eaten in Eretz Yisrael. But it's a little bit different than the other mitzvot hatzvuyot ba'aretz. Min haTorah, it is only in Eretz Yisrael. It's not like chadash that maybe applies in Chutz La'aretz as well. Min haTorah, it's not like orla that applies in Chutz La'aretz as well. Min haTorah, challah applies only in Eretz Yisrael. We'll talk about Chutz La'aretz in a minute. But what's interesting is it doesn't matter where the grain was grown. Because challah is taken not from grain. Challah is taken from dough that's being baked into bread. And so if the dough is made in Eretz Yisrael, even if it's made from flour that was imported from Chutz La'aretz, then it's chayav in challah min haTorah as challah to Eretz Yisrael. And the reverse, if you grow grain in Eretz Yisrael and export it to Chutz La'aretz, and in Chutz La'aretz you make dough out of it, then min haTorah, it's not chayav in challah. In other words, it doesn't matter where it was grown, it matters where the bread is made. So it's not exactly a mitzvah tluya ba'aretz. Yes?
Aren't they really taking maaser or truma from the grain itself?
They did, exactly the point. Because this is a separate mitzvah. That's exactly the point I'm making. Grain that grows to a Jewish farmer in Eretz Israel, you have to take truma and maaser from. Independent of that, if you have flour in Eretz Israel, whether the flour was grown in Eretz Yisrael and you already took Truma Maser from it, whether the flour came from Chutz La'aretz and is pater from Truma Maser. In Eretz Yisrael, if you make that flour into dough, now there's a new requirement called Challah.
So let's say America, it's flour from America.
In Chutz La'aretz, where, even if it's flour from Eretz Yisrael, and certainly if it's flour from Chutz La'aretz, Min haTorah, there's no requirement. However, Midrabanan there is. Okay? Midrabanan, there is a mitzvah of challah also in Chutz La'aretz, and in this case, unlike truma that we spoke about last week, is only in neighboring countries, unlike chadash, which we saw an opinion is only in neighboring countries, challah, the mitzvah applies anywhere in the world, midrabanan. The reason is so that the mitzvah won't be forgotten. Shalot tishakach torat challah, people shouldn't forget the mitzvah. So if you bake bread anywhere in the world, we're going to see that there's a chiyuv of challah midrabanan. If the dough is owned by a Jew, if a guy makes bread, or even makes dough, then there's no mitzvah of challah, unlike chadash that we said probably applies even to grain grown by a guy. Challah is a mitzvah min haTorah in Eretz Yisrael, and midrabanan in Chutz La'aretz, bread made by a Jew, regardless of where the flour came from. However, even in Eretz Yisrael today, it's midrabanan. Just like we said if you remember when we learned Trumot to Masrot, we said, because it says, there also, it says, Bevoachem el Haaretz, and the Gemara says, Biat Kulchem, you need all of Am Yisrael to be in Eretz Yisrael for these mitzvot to be min haTorah. So that applies to challah as well. Therefore, Bizman Hazeh, when unfortunately much of the Jewish people is in Galut, so that means that both in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz, Bizman Hazeh, challah is midrabanan. In practical terms, that means that there's almost no difference, halacha l'maaseh, today, between challah Eretz Yisrael and challah Chutz La'aretz. There are a few very technical differences and one important one. The important difference is that in Chutz La'aretz, in Eretz Yisrael, as we'll see, the minute the dough becomes chayav in challah, it's tevel. The same word we use when we talk about truma maaseh. As soon as you make the dough and it becomes chayav, the dough becomes tevel, it's usher to eat. And the only way you're allowed to eat the dough is if you're mafrish challah. In chutz la'aretz, there is a chiyuv of challah, but the rabbis allowed a person in chutz la'aretz to eat the bread first, and then to say challah afterwards, to leave some over and separate challah afterwards. Normally one wouldn't do that, but we'll see one case when you might need to do that, is if you baked bread for Shabbat and you forgot to take challah. You're not allowed to take challah on Shabbat. So in chutz la'aretz, if you're in that situation, you have a solution. In chutz la'aretz, you'll be allowed to eat the bread, just make sure not to finish it, and leave some over, and after Shabbat, you'll take challah from the part that's remaining. In Eretz Yisrael, that solution wouldn't work, and we'll have to see if there's any other solutions you can do. Ellie. Yes, challah is a matnat kohen. It's supposed to be given to the kohen, although as we'll see nowadays, we can't give it to the kohen either, for the same reasons we can't give them truma, because there's tuma, and even if we could solve the tuma problems, which in challah chutz la'aretz at least we probably could, but we also don't know who the kohanim are.
Okay, but I don't understand how this supports kohen. Like, oh, you don't have any land. We'll just give you like challah once a week, and we'll just give you like.
It's not only challah. There's a whole system of matnot kohuna. They get truma, they get bikurim, they get reshit hagez, they get all kinds of things, and one of their matanot is challah. So if everybody gave a piece of their bread to the kohen, the kohanim would always have bread. Yeah, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people compared to the number of Kohanim that there are. That's probably why the Kohen gets less than the Levi. Maaser Rishon is a tenth, and Truma is only, we said, 2%, but there's less Kohanim, so it evens out. Yes,
Abby. What did you say about a guy making bread from Jewish dough? Did you just say, something?
No, we're going to see that what matters is the dough, not the bread. Mm-hmm. I said if a guy makes the dough, it doesn't need challah. Okay? Yeah.
So about Ali said, they're covered with food, let's say, what do anything else they need?
The Kohanim. So they have other things also. We give them, for example, Reshit HaGez. That's the wool when we shear the sheep. The Kohanim get the wool and they can sell it. Yeah.
But didn't the Kohanim have other jobs? Like,
the Kohen's allowed to work. They even have a little bit of land. And
they only really work in just like a couple
weeks? Yeah, but okay, let's not get into this topic now completely. The Kohanim, let's not get into this now. Okay? Right now we're discussing the halacha. Okay, the halacha is you have to separate challah and midrabanan applies nowadays. Midrabanan applies in chutz la'aretz and applies bezman hazeh. Also midrabanan in Eretz Yisrael. Yes.
If the reasoning for this giving this now is so it will be forgotten, why is that the reasoning for like truma and maser and stuff? The other ones.
Probably is the reasoning nowadays also. Okay. So let's discuss what some of the rules are. For hafrashat challah. When do you need to take challah? First of all, this applies only to things made from chameshet minei dagan. So if you make something out of rice flour, corn flour, potato starch, I don't know, quinoa, any of these other grains, so then there's no chiyuv of challah. But if it's chameshet minei dagan or a mixture, okay, if you make cornbread, but you also put wheat flour in, so if the wheat flour can be discerned in the taste, if it tastes different than something made completely from corn flour, so then there's going to be a chiyuv. But this comes only from things that are baked. Okay? If you make a dough or a batter out of chameshet minei dagan, and you're going to bake it in an oven, okay, this could be bread, this could be cake, this could be cookies, anything of that nature, then there's going to be a chiyuv of challah. But if, for example, if you make something out of chamesh and gagan and then you cook them, you cook it. Okay, so for example, pasta. Pasta is made out of flour and then it's cooked, it's not baked. So then there's no chiyuv to take challah from it. If you're going to fry something in oil, so then there's not going to be chiyuv to take challah from it. Only something that's baked. And the determining factor is the mixing of the dough. Because the Torah spoke about isa, reishit ha'isotecha. It talked about taking challah from the dough. So what's important is, if when you mix the dough, it's dough that's owned by a Jew, and it's designed to be baked, then at that point there is a chiyuv of challah. But for example, if a goy mixes the dough, even if a Jew bakes it afterwards, there's no chiyuv of challah. So for example, they sell in the supermarket, I think, frozen, like, cookie dough, right? Okay, so assuming
that the
yum. So assuming that the factory that made that dough is owned by a goy, so then the goy had no chiyuv. There is no chiyuv in the challah. You're buying the dough already as dough, and then you take it and put it into an oven and bake it. There's no problem. There's no problem. But if a Jew owns the factory, then there is a chiyuv of challah. Okay, and we'll talk about how we deal with factory situations. But there's a chiyuv of challah if the dough is mixed by a Jew, and if at the time that the dough is mixed, the intention is to bake it. So, for example, you were planning to bake bread, for example, or some kind of cake, and you mixed the dough, and it didn't come out the way you thought, and you decided, all right, if I bake this, it's not going to work. I'm going to fry. I'm going to change. Take this recipe. I'm going to change it into something else. I'm going to be creative, and I'm going to fry this in oil. And instead of bread, I'm going to make fried
donuts
out of it. It's still chayav and challah, because when you mixed the dough, you intended to bake it. And therefore, the dough became tevel. And now the dough is chayav and challah. Even though in the end you didn't bake it, the dough is chayav and challah. On the other hand, if you mix the dough intending for it to be fried, and then you decided, you know what, forget it, I'm just going to bake it in the oven. I decided I want to be on a low-fat diet, so instead of frying it, I'm going to bake it. What would the din be?
You do.
Because at the moment you baked it, it then got a chiyuv. In other words, if you mixed it planning to bake it, it became tevel, and then the dough is tevel. If you mixed it planning to fry it, it wasn't tevel, but then when you stuck it in the oven, at that point it becomes chayav and chal.
That's the same in Israel.
Yeah.
Because then you can't separate the dough. It's already baked.
Now, we'll talk about that. You can separate it after it's baked also. We'll talk about that.
No.
What I just said is not only in Chutz La'aretz. The only practical difference.
After it's baked. To separate it after it's baked.
No. That's not what I said. I said in Chutz La'aretz, you're allowed to separate it after you eat it. Okay. Both in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, the din is. I was going to get to this in a few minutes, but I'll explain it now. There's two types of dough or batter. Actually, let's put it this way. There's dough and there's batter. A solid dough, what's called in the halacha blila ava, a solid dough, like the dough that bread is made out of, or that chocolate chip cookies, or that kind of stuff is baked out of, that's called blila ava, thick mixing.
Like iron.
Yes, iron. And a liquid batter is called blila raka, like a soft mixture. Like a cake batter that you pour into a pan to bake. No, they're both chayav and challah, but the difference is the following. Ideally, with blila ava, with dough, you're supposed to take the challah before you bake it, as soon as the dough is made. With blila raika, you can't. You can't take challah from liquid. So if you're going to take challah from cake, and we're going to see in our kitchens that almost never happens, and we'll see why in a minute. It happens in factories, because the quantities, right? But if you're going to take challah from cake, so then you have to do that after it's baked. But even with bread that the challah is supposed to be taken before it's baked, let's say you made dough and you baked it into bread and you remembered afterwards, I didn't take challah. So you can take challah after it's baked. That's true in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. In Chutz La'aretz, you can even eat it first and then take challah from what remains. That's the only difference. In Eretz Yisrael, it's tevel, you can't eat it until you take challah. And therefore, he said on Shabbos, you're not allowed to take challah on Shabbos. So if a person would make bread for Shabbos, which we call challah, which is just confusing, so I won't use that word, because challah here means the part that you take off, right? So if a person would bake bread for Shabbos and forget to take challah, and once Shabbat begins would remember, oh my gosh, I didn't take challah, what am I going to do? In Chutz La'aretz, there's a pitaron, there's a solution. In Chutz La'aretz, you can just go ahead and eat it, just make sure to save a piece, don't finish it. And from the piece you save till after Shabbat. After Shabbat, you take challah from the piece you saved, then you're fine. In Eretz Yisrael, you're not going to be allowed to do that. So in Eretz Yisrael, you may not be allowed to eat that bread. We'll see. It depends if you had set up something in advance. We'll talk about it, I hope, towards the end. Yes?
So, like, if you're mixing something and then you hand it over to someone else who doesn't know what they're mixing, and you say, can you just mix this for me? And they don't know whether it's going to be bread or, like, fried or baked, then do you take challah from it if it's going to be fried?
Well, understand, I handed you a bowl of flour and a pitcher of water and some other ingredients and said, just mix.
No, like...
And you have no idea what you're doing.
No, like, sometimes, you know, you're busy and someone's in the kitchen, so you say, could you just mix this for me? It's already in the bowl, you know?
Well, once the flour and the water, once the water hits the flour,
it's mixed.
But
okay, so mix is really just combined.
Right.
Okay.
That is what the word mix means.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, there's another halacha that. All right, I guess I have to explain this. This is just a complicated detail. Let's say you make, normally, okay, you're going to have to help me out here because I'm sure at least some of you bake a lot more than I do, which is never. When you make cakes and does all ingredients, is there always water involved? Would you ever have a recipe that has flour and
a
liquid, but it's always water?
No.
No. Okay, so what other liquid? Okay, so if you would have a mixture, okay, if you would have a mixture of flour and liquid, let's say you would have flour, eggs, and oil. Would you ever have only that?
Yeah.
And apple juice, okay? Let's say? Or not. Okay, but the point is no water. So you now have a complication based on the following halacha. This is complicated, so I'm just going to say this briefly because you need to know this. At least in theory. You're not going to need to know this because this is probably never going to come up that you're going to have to take challah from such an item. But if you ever do have to take challah from such an item, you need to know this din. Challah, as we're going to see, what are we going to do with the challah after we take it? We're going to burn it, in all likelihood. And the reason we're going to burn it is that it can't be eaten by a kohen because it's tamei. So the Kohen can't eat it, and we want to make sure that nobody eats it by mistake, so we're going to, ideally speaking, we're going to burn it. We'll talk about what to do if you can't burn it, but that's the idea. You're supposed to burn it. Now, you probably don't know this, but food items are not automatically mekabel tumah. In other words, if I have an apple that was picked off a tree, and I'm of course tummy, and I touch the apple, the apple's not tummy. In order for the apple to be mekabel tumah, it has to go through a process called hakshara, which is done with a liquid. There are seven liquids that can make something, that can make a food, that can makshir the food, can make it possible for the food to be mekabel tumah. Those seven liquids are mayim, water, yayin, shemen, what? Yaj, yeah, that's the thing. Mayim, yayin, shemen, chalav, dvash, dam. I'm missing one. And tal, thank you. Right. Those seven liquids are makshir for tuma. So
it,
mayim, yayin, shemen, chalav, tal, dvash, and dam. Do. In halacha, it's not considered water. Okay, now the point is this. In our example, the flour was mixed with oil and shemen is olive oil. So we're not using olive oil, we're using canola oil, let's say, and we're using eggs, and we used apple juice, let's say, but there's none of those ingredients. So then this bread is not tamei. If the bread is not tamei, then it's challah tahora, and I'm not gonna be allowed to burn it. I'm not going to be allowed to burn it because it's challah tahora. Even though we're all tamei, the challah is not tamei. So that's a whole problem what to do with it. The Shulchan Aruch advises that if you're baking out of such a thing, pour a little bit of water in or one of those other ingredients, and then you'll be able to burn it afterwards. And as you want it to become tamei, because you're not going to be able to eat it, you need what? Because it's usher. It's challah tahora. In theory, a kohen b'tahara could eat it. If the challah itself is tamei, then even if the kohen are fine, then it has to be burnt. If the challah is tahora, then all we need is a kohen who's tahor to eat it. But we don't have a kohen that we know is a kohen, and he's not tahor, so we can't eat it, and then we're stuck with it. You're still going to need a take.
What would you do if you ended up with tahor?
It's complicated. There are a number of possibilities, and some very interesting ones, but that is beyond the scope of this current lecture. Okay. I'll tell you afterwards if you want.
Okay.
Pour in some water, yeah.
Okay.
That's a good question. It doesn't have to be that much. You have to study machshirin to know the exact amount. There has to be enough that it's machshir for tuma. Again, this is almost never going to come up practically, so if it comes up, you'll have to ask. Now, what is going to come up practically, and this is the main issue you need to know, and this is why most of the time when you bake cake or cookies or things like that, most of the time, it's mainly only when you bake bread in your kitchen that you're going to need to deal with it. And that is because there's a minimum size, there's a shiur of how much flour has to be involved for there to be a chiyuv of challah. So it's complicated. Okay? First, let's understand where it comes from. The Torah spoke about reshit arisot techem. Okay? It has to be the first of your bread. Now, when was this mitzvah given, of course? Where was Bnei Israel at the time?
No,
they weren't in Eretz Yisrael. They were in the Midbar. What did they eat in the Midbar?
Man.
They ate man. How much man did they eat?
Not one portion.
How much was a portion? Specific size. And Omer. What specific is each family, depends how many people they had. But it was Omer Lagul Golet. Each person got an Omer. What's an Omer? The Torah says, a pasuk in the Torah, Ve'ha Omer Asiri Taifahi. The Gemara understands that since the Torah was speaking to those people who ate man, and it said, Reshit arisot techem, that the quantity of dough that's going to be covered by this mitzvah is dough that's made from an omer of flour. And the Gemara has a whole calculation, and it comes out, by the time you get to the Shulchan Aruch, I'm skipping all the intermediate stages, this is actually a fascinating topic that goes far beyond challah, figuring out the shiurim, but the Shulchan Aruch figures out, or calculates, I should say, that the quantity of flour that is chayav in challah is equivalent to the volume of 43 1/5 eggs. 43.2 eggs.
Why did they do everything in terms of eggs?
Because it was a very common measure.
How do you find 43 eggs?
You go find 43 now chickens. What do you mean? The volume of an egg times 43.2. Okay? But, so it should be simple, right? All we have to do is find the volume of an egg, an average egg, and calculate, multiply by 43 times 2, and we're going to get 43.2, and we should get the answer. There's a huge machloket about this. You may have heard about this machloket. You may have heard the name Rav Chaim Na'eh, sometimes known as Grach, Gaon Rav Chaim, Rav Avram Chaim Na'eh. He was a Chabad Chassid here in Eretz Yisrael from the town of Hebron about 100 years ago. And he had a huge machloket with another great gadol who lived in Eretz Yisrael at the time, the Chazon Ish. Both of them at the early part of the 20th century, there was a very, very big machloket between them about how to calculate the volume of all of these shiurim. And it's based on a contradiction in the Gemara. And I won't go into all the details now, but basically the Chazon Ish came to the conclusion there's a problem, things don't add up. And the Chazon Ish came to the conclusion that the only way to resolve this contradiction is to assume that eggs today are half the size of what they used to be. That the eggs used to be twice as big. That's the only way the Chazon Ish is able to resolve when the Gemara was talking about it. It was when the Gemara was talking about 43.2 eggs, it really meant, in our terms, 86.4 eggs or something like that. That would be the Chazon Ish. And Reb Chaim Na'eh did not accept that at all. And as a result, you will find and this was a big machloket, Reb Chaim Na'eh wrote an entire book about it, and the bottom line is that in anything that, you may have heard the term Shir Chazon Ish, maybe you've heard people use that term, right? But in anything that has to do with sizes of these measurements, Kezayit and Kebetza and Asiri Taifa and all these things, there's going to be this machloket between the Grach Na'eh and between the Chazon Ish. So the bottom line is the following. If I translate the 43.2 eggs into our terminology, now here in theory we're talking about a measurement of volume. But contemporary poskim, when they talk about flour, they found it easier to speak in weight. Okay, to really get exact, different types of flour have different weights, but we're approximating here. So I could talk to you in terms of how many cups of flour. And I will talk to you about that actually in a minute. But the contemporary poskim who translated these terms spoke in weight. Okay, according to the Chazon Ish, the shiur of challah to be chayav in challah vadai with a bracha comes out to 2.25 kilograms, or just under 5 pounds. According to Rav Chaim Na'e, it's much less, and it's 1 2/3 kilograms, or that's the equivalent of 3 2/3 pounds. But both the Chazon Ish and Rav Chaim Na'e suggested to be machmir for smaller amounts, which is also based on a discrepancy in one of the sources. And the bottom line, therefore, is the following. The general practice is to be mafrish challah with a bracha only if you're making 2.25 kilos, which is about 5 pounds of flour. If you're making dough from less than that amount, then, in Israel, when you go shopping, a package of flour that you buy here is a kilo. So 2.25 of those, or for you Americans who like to think of these terms, 5 pounds, it's the same thing. That's the amount that we would separate, according to most opinions, that we would separate with a bracha, because it's vada, even the Chazon Ish, everyone agrees that you're chayv and challah for that. However, for a quantity less than that, at least if it's 1.2 kilograms of flour, and some say even as little as, which is 2 2/3 pounds, and some say even as little as a kilo, you'd be mafrish without a bracha. Okay, so in cups, we're talking about approximately 9 cups of flour is already enough to be a suffix, and we would tell you to take challah without a bracha. Okay, or a little more than an Israeli sack of flour is a kilo, so let's say 1 1/5 of those, or according to some, even just a little more than one of those, would be chayav and challah without a bracha. And with a bracha, only if you get 2.25 kilos, which is 5 pounds. Yes.
What did you say before the machlokes between the Chazon Ish and the Grach? He doesn't believe that eggs are half the size.
He thinks the eggs are the same size they used to be, and he resolves the contradiction in a different way. Correct. Yes.
Since it's about the mixing, if you have a huge amount that would make you high in doing it, but they're not being mixed together,
we're going to get to that. Exactly, what we're going to get to now. Okay. So if I take 5 pounds of flour and I make one huge dough out of it, then, in most cases, it's going to be chayav in challah. If I make smaller batches, though, okay, let's say I'm baking challah for the whole MMY, right? So I don't know how many kilos of flour we're going to need, but I assume a lot, right? So how many? Does anyone know? If you were taking a challah recipe, you're going to make for the entire school.
5 pounds makes like 8 challahs.
And how many would we need for the whole school?
Like 80.
Okay, we're going to use 10 pounds of flour, okay? So, if we took a huge mixing bowl, what was that?
10 pounds. 10 pounds.
20 pounds.
I feel like 20 pounds. Yeah.
20 pounds. Okay. So we're gonna take, right? If we had a huge mixing bowl and we mixed all that together, or even if we mixed just 5 pounds of it together at one time, so then we would be chayav in challah. On the other hand, if we made a smaller quantity, if we said, listen, we can't handle all this at once, we're gonna make smaller batches. So then, we'll see in a second what happens. But that's why in your kitchens, I had a whole thing with my wife this morning because I was talking to her about this. I said, you never really take challah from cake. And she says, of course you don't have to take challah from cake. And she knows what she actually does. And I'm like sitting with books. I don't know how to bake. I've started to learn how to cook. I've managed to get a few little things. I actually, a couple of years ago, I made a pot of pasta and burnt it. I couldn't do anything. Okay, I recently learned how to... I'm really working on this now. I'm just telling you, I burnt the pasta, okay? But I learned how to barbecue. I got into it. Then I started cooking a little bit in the kitchen, and I actually mastered the art of cracking eggs just a few months ago. It is really hard. Thank you. It is not a simple thing. You got to get the velocity just right, and if it breaks. And then even if you crack it properly, then it breaks again. It's not simple. So I can fry eggs now. And I can make pasta. Okay, that's about the extent of it. But baking a cake is way beyond me. So I had no kind. My wife said, what are you talking about? There's no mitzvah of challah from cake. And I said, it's not true. Look, there's shulchan aruch. And I started talking to her. I spoke to a few of the women here. And we thought, you're never going to do it. What's an average cake recipe? Has how many cups of flour? 2.5 cups of flour. 3 cups of flour. You'd have to make a triple recipe. And you'd have to mix it in one bowl. at one time before you'd be chayev in challah. You wouldn't really do that. If you would you ever use 9 cups of challah, 9 cups of flour in one batch?
If you made a wedding.
Okay, no, so in industrial settings, in professional bakeries, they for sure take challah from cake. No question about it. No question about it. And by the way, if you look, I just looked this morning, I was in the store, I picked up a package of Berman Rugalach, it says right on there, on the Rugalach, Hufrisha Challah Kedin. But in your kitchen, it almost never comes up. I've come to the conclusion, correct me if I'm wrong, the only thing that most people would bake with that much challah at one time in their private kitchens is bread. Right? That's why people associate with bread, but it's not true. It applies to cake, it applies to anything made from batter or dough that's going to be baked in an oven. In practical terms, it usually wouldn't come up in your kitchen unless, you know, I said to someone, like, what if you were making, like people make from a shloach manot, they make, like, a lot of cakes, or someone's having a kiddush and you're going to make, you know. So she said, yeah, I would do that, but I'm not going to make it all, I'm not going to make one batch. I don't have, my bowls aren't big enough, so I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just quoting, right? So that's the thing. But just 1 second. So let's say I'm going to do that, right? I'm going to make, you know, 4 batches of, I have this cake recipe, 2.5 cups of flour makes like one, like regular size tray of cakes, like brownies or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay. So I need to make 4 of those, let's say. So if I had a huge mixing bowl, I'd do it all at once, then yeah, I'd have to take challah. But I don't. So I'm going to make it 4 times. Maybe I'll make a double recipe. So I'll make 2 and then another 2. But, so in theory, there's not going to be any chiyuv of challah there, because I made each batch separately, unless I put the dough somehow together. So for example, if I was baking bread, right? So if we're baking bread for the whole MMY, and we do it in tiny little batches, but then we have all the dough lined, let's say for some reason, we mix it up separately. But then we line up all the dough together on one tray or something like that, and the doughs are touching or they're in the same kli. Okay, so let's not talk about the whole MMY. If I made, you know, 2 kilos of dough, and I made 1 batch, so that's not enough to be. Well, that's enough. Let's say 1 kilo. I made 1 kilo of dough, so let's say I'm not going to be machmir on exactly 1 kilo of flour, and I made dough, and I made another 1 kilo of flour, and I made dough. So neither one is chayv and challah. But then I take the 2 doughs and I put them next to each other and I touch them to one another and they touch each other, or I put them in the same bowl, let's say, the same kli, and I cover them together. Then they're mistaref and they become chayv and challah. If they're in the same kli, then they're going to become chayv and challah. And that people know about. The following halacha, and this, I think, maybe could happen. Let's say you're baking, for example, chocolate chip cookies. Now, help me out here. How many cups of flour in a chocolate chip cookie recipe?
1.5.
What? 2? Not even?
1.5.
Okay. So I make 7 batches of cookies, okay? Each one separately. How many cookies does 1.5 cups of flour make?
30.
Okay. I'm going to make 300 cookies. Okay? In separate batches. Separate batches. So each batch I make, and I bake, and they're not chayv and challah. Even after they're baked into cookies, if I take all the cookies, all 300 cookies, and I put them in one huge box, boom, they're chayv and challah. And that people don't know. If you put them all in the same kli, even after they're baked.
What are the different pans, but in the same bag?
Yes, Tess.
So can I ask you a question? Like, I don't understand why they're still chayv and challah if they're in a different form already. I understand they're not bread, whatever, they're cookies, but if it's the same thing, why are they still, like, if you, let's say, decided that you were going to eat them and then eat 300 cookies, half of them, and throw them in the garbage, and they were all in the garbage together, like touching each other, then would you still be hot? You
know, because the dough is mitzdarif.
But do you get my question? Like,
no.
But if they're in a different form, like, let's say you're
because you could take challah even after it's baked.
Oh. even if they were in the garbage, let's say, like even if they were, let's say you threw them all out, I don't know why, they all fell on the floor.
If they're thrown out, then what difference does it make?
Time they're going to touch.
If they're all thrown out, then no one's going to eat them anyway. I don't know if that. If they're mitzdarif in a garbage, I'm not sure that's the same. It's when you put them in something to store them together. That matter. I still have a lot more stuff to go through, so let's just with Ricky quickly.
Is that the same thing as bli l'racha? Like once it's already cooked, then you separate it.
Like well, bli l'racha, you have to separate it after it's baked. Bli l'ava, in theory, you could separate it before it's baked. In theory, you're supposed to separate it before it's baked. In this case, it wasn't chayev until it was baked. Then it became chayev. Okay. Yeah.
Or like if you have a little bit of dough in the bowl from like the last batch and you make another batch.
No, the whole thing has to be together.
So like if you're eating two cookies and you're doing two different batches and you put them on your plate together.
No, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Okay. Yes.
So theoretically if you take like, this is also for storable, because you have like 300 chips of white cookies, you put them all in a tin to like serve them at a kiddush, I don't know, then you have to take challah from that.
Well, if you bought them in the store, then hopefully they were, you bought them in a kosher store and the mashgiach took care of this already.
Chips of white cookies or like Oreo was like...
Well, they were made, and then the dough was mixed, let's assume that the factory is not Jewish, the dough was mixed. If you buy pre-baked stuff with a hashgacha, the mashgiach took care of it. Either the mashgiach figured out that the owner was a goy and there was no chiv and challah, and there never will be a chiv and challah. Or there was a chiv and challah, and the mashgiach took care of it, and I'll explain to you how they do that if I have time. Let me just finish up quickly here, okay? Now, one other detail about that, and then I'll just get to the main thing. The dough has to be belonging to the same person, okay? If you make a batch of dough intending to divide it among different people, okay, then you knock them. So, for example, in Gan, When the kids, there's like a project in Gan every year that the kids make challah dough and then they take it home and every kid comes home with like this unbaked challah that you have to stick in the oven. So there's no chiyuv in hafrashas challah. Even if they made the dough with enough flour to have a chiyuv, but it was made with the intention of dividing it up between different people. So if they know what they're doing, then it has to be done in a certain way in order to create a chiyuv. Because if it's made lechatchila to be divided, then there's no chiyuv in challah. Okay, this can happen also if a bunch of girls, let's say, are going away for Shabbat, and you're not going to the same place. You say, hey, let's bake challah, and we'll each take challah with us, right? So then you, even if you have a shir, you may not be chayev. So you have to
deal with those details.
I have to just move on, okay? So just know that.
Even
if you mix the dough, even if you mix 5 pounds of flour together, but it's intending that you're going to take two and she's going to take two and she's going to take two.
And then you bake them all together and then
you mix them together and bake them together and everything. Right. Okay. Now, how do you actually mafrish challah when there is a chiyuv? So the procedure is not very difficult. First of all, what's the shear? How big does challah have to be? Min haTorah, there is no shear, even a masher. Midrabanan, there is a shear. The shear is 1/24th. Of the dough for a private person, or 1/48th for a professional baker. The rabbis were mechalek between the two. A professional baker, it's his business, he doesn't have to give as much. However, bizman hazeh, it's just like we saw with truma, since it's going to be destroyed anyway, and it's not, the whole point of the shear was to make sure Eli's worried about the kohanim, how they're going to live on this tiny little bit. So the rabbis were worried about the kohanim, they made sure at least it's 1/24th of the dough. But since today the Kohanim are not going to get it anyway, basically the shear is a very small amount. It has to be big enough that you can physically pull off a piece, but a very small amount would be enough. So what you do is you stand next to the dough, you put all the dough that you want to be mafresh from. It has to be from the same type of grain. If you have, you know, bread made from wheat and bread made from, let's say, oats, so then it's kind of, sometimes it can be mitzdarif, sometimes it can't. That's
a multi-grain bread.
No, multi-grain bread, the same bread has multiple grains, that's fine. If you have, let's say, one loaf of bread from one grain, and one loaf of bread from a different grain, then it's complicated, because certain grains can be mitzdarif with others, and that's a whole shear in its own right. But you take all, and it has to also be from the same year. Again, this isn't really going to come up in your kitchen so much, but if you had flour from one year and flour from a different year, and then the bakeries, they have to sometimes worry about this.
But if you run out of flour in one container,
if the two containers were from two different years' crops, you'd have a problem. Right? You probably won't know. So I think you can assume that the rove is not, you know, generally speaking, if you have, you know, in your kitchen, then it's from the same year. Okay, now, stand next to the dough, you make the bracha. Even the bracha is a machlokia, what it is. Okay, the standard nusach is lahafrish chala. Asher gisham zetav zivan lahafrish chala. Some add the words min ha'isa. Lahafrish chala min ha'isa. The Shulchan Aruch just says lafrish chala, but they say that if you want to say min ha'isa, which is what some sidurim have, you don't lose anything. But there is an alternate nusach. It's machlokas rishonim. Some people say lafrish truma. But the standard Ramah, at least for Ashkenazim, the nusach is lafrish chala min ha'isa. You then break off a piece, say harezeh chala, harezo chala, and then that becomes holy and it has to be burnt. If it can't be burnt, when you burn it, you have to be careful you can't have other things baking in the oven at the same time. So that can cause a problem. Or if it's difficult to burn it, some authorities allow you to wrap it up nicely and throw it away. You know, like we do with truma. Well, that you're not supposed to do. The whole reason for burning the challah is so that nobody eats it by accident, by mistake.
What's
so
a special day or something that you know?
I don't know. I'm not. You know, the Sfarim that I saw said not dafka not to do it. It should be destroyed right away. Okay. Okay, just a regular achat, just two other things. How do they handle this in bakeries? So if the bakery is owned by, if there's a observant Jew who's working in the bakery, then you can hopefully rely on the baker himself to take the dough, but to take the challah. Or if there's a mashgiach, Tmidi, if there's a kind of mashgiach there all the time, then the mashgiach can take care of it. But a lot of times in bakeries and factories, they have a Jewish owned Osem, right? How do they deal with Hafreshet Challah in Osem? That's a Jewish owned company, right? And they're putting out massive batches, and the workers aren't necessarily religious, the workers aren't necessarily Jewish, and how are you going to deal with that? Or, I'll give you another example. Your local pizza store, right? And a pizza store is a great example because they're making bread dough all day long in the pizza store, and they make the dough fresh. So again, if the pizza guy is an observant Jew who can be relied on, then maybe the mashgiach will rely on him to take the challah.
But surely for pizza, they know it's going to be divided into small portions.
No, you usually divide dough into small portions. No. The pizza man is making all the dough for himself, and then he's going to sell it to his customers. That's chayav. It's only if the dough is going to be divided among different people before it's baked. You know, some of the dough is owned by you and some of the dough is owned by me. We get together and we bake the bread together. That's when it would be pater. If a bakery makes, otherwise bakeries would never have to take challah. Because it's always, they're not baking it for themselves. They're making it to sell. But the pizza man, the owner of the store, owns all the pizza. So basically what they do in the way, and it would almost be impossible. You know, so I was just talking just today. Chana Gorelick's father was here, Rabbi David Gorelick. I mentioned him last week. We talked about Chadash. So he came in to see me, talking about something else. I said, "Oh, I just used your article on the Chadash." We started talking. He works for the OU in Kashrus, and then I told him I'm teaching today about Hafreshes Challah. And I started talking to him about this. He told me in Chutz Laaretz, the OU wants in a pizza store. They want there to be a Shomer Shabbos person working in the store. So even if the Mashgiach isn't there, the Shomer Shabbos person can be relied on to take challah. In Israel, at least, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to do that. You're not going to be able to say that every pizza store has to be an observant person. It's just not shayach. Unfortunately, we want to, and the Rabbanut wants to make sure that everybody gets a. And even the OU in Chutz Laaretz, maybe they could do that in a pizza store. They're not going to be able to do that in a factory. So in Chutz Laaretz, many of the factories are owned by goyim, but you have factories where the owner might be a Jew. And then what do you do? So the way they handle it is they have a very interesting system. What they do is you need dough. The other thing is that the challah has to come from tevel, right? I can't take a piece of bread that's already had challah taken from it and make that bread challah on a different batch. So what I do is I make some. This is what they do in these establishments. They go in at the beginning, let's say, of a year, and they make dough, which is tevel. As they make dough that's chayav in challah. And they don't take challah from it. In fact, what the OU does, I found out, the OU actually has one of their matzah companies that makes matzah for the OU. They do a special run of matzah that is given straight to the OU mashkichim. It's not sold, and they don't take challah from it. It's tevel. And they mark the boxes special with these huge stickers, tevel, us or don't eat. Okay? And then every mashgiach gets a box of these matzahs. Or other kashrus agencies use unbaked dough and they stick it in a freezer. It's machlokas between the kashrus agencies and their poskim, whether it can be frozen or baked or whatever. But basically what they do is, in the store or in the factory, in the room where they actually mix the dough, there is somewhere in that room, in the freezer or in a box somewhere, there is dough or matzah that's tevel, that needs to have challah taken from it. And what the mashgiach does, the first time he actually makes a bracha, and he recites a special nusach, and he says, he goes in the first day, then makes a whole batch of stuff, and he says, in the room, all the dough that's in this room, I'm being mafrish on one, I think it's 1/5 of a gram or something like that, of the dough in this box of matzah is the challah for this. And I'm declaring now that every time they make dough in this room, I'm declaring now that a next little piece of a gram of the matzah in the box should be challah for that. And they make that declaration. And some of them have mashgiach say this every morning. He gets up in the morning and he says Moda Ani and he says this nusach. He doesn't have to be there, right? In that bakery, all the dough they're going to make today, every time they make a batch of dough that's chayiv and challah, I'm being mafrish another tiny little piece of that dough that's sitting there should become challah for that batch, and therefore it sort of works automatically. And eventually the thing gets filled up, and then they take that box of matzah or that dough and they burn it. But what they have to do is, the mashgiach has to really be on top of this. First of all, he has to keep track that at some point it gets used up. Because you can't just say a mashu, it has to be a piece that in theory you could break off. So some said a gram, some said a fifth of a gram, but at some point it gets filled up, you have to have a cheshbon of how much they're making and how much you have and you have to replace this. And plus, what we talked about before, at some point, the 1 year's crop is going to end and they're going to start using the next year's flour, and the box of matzahs from last year's crop can't do next year's crop, so they're going to have to change this. The Mashkiach actually has to be on top of this. But that's how they do it.
Where do they leave their stuff?
They leave it somewhere in the place.
That's also dangerous.
So it's marked very clearly, do not touch, and Mashkiach has to go in periodically and check for it. Right? So I'm just telling you that, first of all, because it's interesting to know, but also it shows you that that this is one that you know, there's so many things that a mashgiach has to, the mashgiach has to know what he's doing and has to be on top of things like this. Hafrashat challah is one of the most difficult things to be on top of, because you have to either that or you have to have somebody who's there all day long in the store, you know, or in a place where this comes up, in a bakery or a pizza store, or anywhere else where they bake, you know, restaurants sometimes bake their own breads, you know, anything like that. Okay, one last thing and then I'll stop. Challah, as we know, is a mitzvah that's associated particularly with women. It's one of three mitzvot, right? Nida challah v'adlaka taner, that women have a special, men are chayiv also, man makes bread, he has to take challah, but there's a special relationship of women to this, and there is it's brought down, that there's a special mitzvah for women to be mafrish challah on Erev Shabbat, and there are women who go out of their way to try very hard to make bread and be mafrish challah on Erev Shabbat. Some people take that very seriously. Other people don't. But to the extent that you do take it seriously, it's a great mitzvah, but in order to do it, you have to make sure that you know what you're doing and you're doing it properly. And people who are so interested in, you know, if you don't know what you're doing, you might end up wanting to do this great mitzvah and you might wind up making a brachal batala or something. So you have to learn the halachot. Okay, so that's challah, and we're out of time for today.